Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Credit Card Cardholder Agreement Fine Print Post-Decision Edition. Thanks for tuning in. On Monday, March 9th, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Vaden v. Discover Bank. In this case, the Supreme Court considered whether a suit brought under the Federal Arbitration Act, quote, arises under federal law when the petition to compel raises no federal question, but the underlying dispute does involve federal law. In an opinion delivered by Justice Ginsburg, the court held that, following the well-pleaded complaint rule, federal jurisdiction for the purposes of compelling arbitration cannot rest upon the contents of a counterclaim, reversing the Fourth Circuit decision below. To discuss the decision, we welcome O'Melveny & Myers partner Brian Brooks. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Brooks.
Hello, and thanks very much for joining this podcast on the Supreme Court's recent decision in Vaden versus Discover Bank. Vaden is one of two cases decided by the Supreme Court this term on the scope of the Federal Arbitration Act, and in particular on the right of contract parties who have entered into arbitration agreements to enforce those agreements. As a place to start, Vaden is a very interesting 5-4 decision of the court with a fairly unusual alignment of justices on both sides of that 5-4 divide. The majority's opinion in the case was written by Justice Ginsburg, but was joined by Justices Scalia, Kennedy, Souter, and Thomas, a fairly unusual alignment of justices in any contested case. And the minority opinion for the four-justice minority was written by Chief Justice Roberts, joined by his Bush appointee colleague Justice Alito, but also joined by liberal-leaning Justices Stevens and Breyer. Now, the case begins, as many Supreme Court cases do, with a fairly anodyne threshold procedural issue, but really becomes interesting when one looks at the second issue in the case. But to understand the posture, let's start with the first question that the court's majority began with. The question was whether a district court, looking at an FAA Section 4 motion to compel arbitration, should look through that arbitration petition and determine its jurisdiction based on whether there was jurisdiction in the underlying lawsuit between the parties in state court, or whether it should look at the arbitration petition itself. And to understand the way that that issue plays out, you need to understand just a little bit about the underlying dispute between Discover Bank and Vaden. Now, the dispute was straightforward. Discover Bank commenced a lawsuit in state court against Vaden to collect a debt that Vaden allegedly owed on a credit card. Now, rather than simply answering the complaint, Vaden counterclaimed against Discover Bank and asserted claims that were completely preempted by the Federal Deposit Insurance Act. What's important to know about that is that it is undisputed in the case, and in fact, the Supreme Court took pains to note that had Vaden's counterclaims been filed not as counterclaims, but instead filed as an original complaint against Discover Bank, there would have been no question about federal jurisdiction at all. So there's no question in the case but that the counterclaims raised legitimate federal questions that, in a complaint, could have served as a basis for jurisdiction. The problem in the case was created by the fact that they were instead filed as counterclaims. And under the Supreme Court's decision in Holmes Group versus Vornado, a case decided earlier this decade, counterclaims can't serve as the basis for jurisdiction because under the well-pleaded complaint rule, only those claims asserted in the originating complaint and not any future anticipated counterclaims or claims can be analyzed for jurisdictional purposes. So with that background, let's ask ourselves the question whether the district court should be permitted to look through the petition and to determine jurisdiction based on the underlying controversy. Vaden argued not. Vaden argued in the case that there should be no look-through principle and that the court should look only at the Section 4 complaint filed in federal court to enforce arbitration. The Supreme Court majority dispatched that argument in fairly short order. The court noted that the Save For clause in the Federal Arbitration Act makes that untenable as a matter of plain statutory language. The court's reasoning on this is worth quoting. The court says, Vaden's argument, though reasonable, is difficult to square with the statutory language. Section 4 directs courts to determine whether they would have jurisdiction, quote, save for the arbitration agreement, close quote. How then can a dispute over the existence or applicability of an arbitration agreement be the controversy that counts? So in other words, the Supreme Court fairly clearly said that the look-through part of the question is an easy question, and that courts certainly can look at the underlying dispute in assessing jurisdiction. That much is easy. But the second question addressed in the case is much, much harder. The second question is this. May a district court exercise jurisdiction over a Section 4 complaint to compel arbitration when the underlying complaint rests on state law and jurisdiction is based on the presence of a federal counterclaim. Now, that question obviously is answered in the negative by the five-justice majority, but to understand it depends on an understanding of what the phrase controversy between the parties means, and also depends on an understanding of who the relevant parties are in this case. Now, what the Supreme Court says on this is that the controversy at issue, the controversy that must be subject to jurisdiction, is the entire underlying state court action, and not just, to use the court's word, a piece broken off for that action for purposes of the arbitration. Think about it differently. What the court is saying is that a motion to compel arbitration or a section 4 complaint to compel arbitration won't work if the result is that the two parties who have an underlying state court dispute will wind up arbitrating certain aspects of that dispute before an arbitral forum, but will continue litigating other aspects that aren't subject to jurisdiction in a state court forum. In a sense, there's a claim-splitting theme running through this decision. Now, the Supreme Court cautioned and was at pains to note in the decision that they didn't intend that these kinds of disputes weren't arbitrable. Indeed, they noted that the Federal Arbitration Act applies fully in state courts and that the parties could certainly pursue a motion to compel arbitration in the state court forum where the underlying case was pending. But of course, that's cold comfort to many corporate defendants who find themselves litigating in hostile, often politically charged state court environments, which many of us believe is the very reason why the FAA creates jurisdiction in federal courts to decide these kinds of actions separate from the underlying state court case. Now, the dissent written by Chief Justice Roberts really gets at the heart of the matter and focuses on the idea that the majority got wrong its answer to the question of what the relevant controversy is. Remember that what the majority said is that the controversy is the underlying case in its entirety, not in pieces. But what the dissent says about this is that that's not what the plain language of the FAA means about controversy at all. Chief Justice Roberts' analysis is that when the FAA talks about the controversy, what it's referring to is the controversy for which arbitration is proposed and not any other controversy. Again, it's worth quoting just briefly from the Chief Justice's dissent. He says, "This much is clear from the FAA's repeated and consistent use of the term controversy to mean the specific dispute asserted to be subject to arbitration, not to some broader, full-flavored or full-bodied notion of the disagreement between the parties. In Section 2, for example, the controversy is the one to be settled by arbitration and the one to be submitted to arbitration." He goes on to describe some other statutory examples and then concludes, "There is no reason to suppose controversy meant the controversy subject to arbitration everywhere else in the FAA, but something quite different in Section 4. The dissent goes on to note that there is an arbitrary distinction created by the majority's reasoning between cases where the federal question that gives rise to jurisdiction happens to be asserted in the originating complaint with state law counterclaims filed thereafter, and cases where the identical claims are at issue, except that the state law claims are filed first with the federal claims filed as counterclaims. This, the dissent says, is further evidence of a perverse outcome that the framers of the FAA couldn't possibly have anticipated when they drafted the statute in the 1920s. Instead, they say, this problem reinforces the notion that the only relevant controversy for jurisdictional purposes is the controversy that is the subject of the Section 4 complaint for arbitration and not the broader controversy that may have been pending in some other case in some other forum. Now, Vaden leaves a number of important questions unanswered, and these questions have now begun to percolate through the lower courts, leading some of the observers to believe that there may need to be a follow-on Supreme Court decision to resolve the questions raised but not answered in Vaden. For example, Vaden arises in the context of federal question jurisdiction, but many have asked, and some district courts have already looked at the question, does Vaden apply to cases where the Section 4 arbitration action is based on diversity jurisdiction rather than federal question? Think about it this way. Imagine that an underlying case is filed by a plaintiff in state court invoking state law claims against a defendant who is a citizen of a different state and also against a non-diverse defendant. And let's say that the claims against the non-diverse defendant are permissive claims that have little to do with the claims brought by the plaintiff against the defendant with the arbitration agreement, but nonetheless, because of the presence of the non-diverse defendant, that case itself isn't subject to federal jurisdiction. What happens if the arbitration agreement defendant decides to file a Section 4 action in federal court, invoking not federal question jurisdiction as in Vaden, but diversity jurisdiction. Imagine that happens. At least a couple of district courts in the last 2 months since Vaden came down have concluded that in that circumstance, Vaden may bar arbitration altogether simply because of the somewhat adventitious decision by the state court plaintiff to name a non-diverse defendant in the first place. Many critics of that have already begun to pursue appeals of those kinds of applications of Vaden, arguing that if Vaden applies that broadly, that it essentially amounts to a conclusion that for all intents and purposes, the practical ability to enforce arbitration rights in federal court in a Section 4 action will have been all but nullified by the Vaden case. My prediction is that that outcome is quite unlikely. The Chief Justice's opinion is persuasive, even as applied in the federal question context, but is compelling and even more persuasive in the diversity context. And so my guess is that this issue will proceed to the appellate level, and eventually Vaden will be confined to the parameters where it was originally intended, and that is to say, federal question counterclaims in an underlying state law action. But that remains to be seen, and so those who follow arbitration disputes will be well advised to follow Vaden as it percolates in the lower court and as it is applied to factual circumstances and jurisdictional circumstances outside of its original context. Thanks very much for listening, and good luck in understanding this very important case.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.